Good evening. Thank you so much for being here. It's an exciting day for me today. I'll explain that in a second. The lesson, as you see, is entitled Chaos and Cosmos, and I've grown weary of explaining my lack of credentials with regard to ancient dead languages. I'm not going to burden you with that again. But I do want to have a word or two to say about two particular Greek words that come up in conversation, especially with regard to the topic of evolution. I wanted to share a few thoughts with you this evening on that note. And I thought it would be an appropriate time for me to unveil an experiment that I've been working on for the last 5 years. We moved here shortly after, on June 1st, I guess, 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years. And I've been studying about evolution and thinking about the idea of disparate parts coming together and evolving into some great thing over time. I thought I would try something. So I went back in my backyard and I got a big tub kind of thing. And I took a bag of flour and I dumped it in there. And I took a jug of milk and I poured it in there. And I took a dozen eggs and I dropped them in there. I took them out of the shell. I probably shouldn't have done that, strictly speaking, but I took them out of the shell, simplify the process a little bit. And what else? There was a bag of sugar. I put a bag of sugar in there. And about three or four big bars of chocolate. And I put, I'd moving here from Texas, I'd heard the Florida sun was hot. I'm not sure I believed that exactly, but okay, whatever. So I just put it out there in the sun. And I figure that 5 years is really not all that long a time as far as evolutionary processes, but I was shortcutting the process considerably. I mean, I actually did gather the ingredients. I put them in the same place. Some of them I took out of their wrappers. I put them in the heat. So I figure that maybe balanced things out a little bit. And I figure I'll wait for 5 years and see what comes of this. And then yesterday I went out there with my my birthday candles to try to get ready for my big, I got a birthday coming up next month. Maybe I'll have a cake ready for me all of a sudden. And I didn't have a cake. In fact, it didn't look anything like a cake. It was. In fact, I kind of had to fight through the flies a little bit to figure out what exactly it was, and it was a mess basically. It started out as an absolute chaos. It was those of you who have baked, you know what I'm talking about. You throw a bunch of ingredients in a big bowl, and it looks like a mess. Well, found out that left to itself, unaided, unattended, it gets to be a bigger mess. A much, much bigger mess. And I didn't do that, obviously. That's all made up. But it's an example, though, of how things work in the universe. In fact, they almost always work that way. There is chaos and there is cosmos. And the two don't tend to go together very well, and the ball very definitely rolls in one particular direction. I'll explain a little bit of what I mean by that. Let's take these words kind of independently and figure out which one, in fact, did come first and which one makes more sense. Chaos is a Greek word that basically means a bunch of nothing. It's a gap. It's an emptiness. It's used in the ancient texts with regard to a chasm, an emptiness between one place and another. And the word basically came to mean disorder, randomness, a big mess, a bunch of nothing, essentially. Chaos, a state of utter fear and disorder, is the word that is used by Bulfinch and other mythology archivers. Chaos is what was there before anything was there. And you can look at chaos as an entity, or you can look at chaos as absolutely nothing or whatever. Whatever makes a better story, I suppose. But supposedly, it was out of chaos that was born first, Gaia, which is the earth, and then Uranus, which is the sky. Different accounts render it differently. Sometimes they came out at the same time. But essentially, sky and earth were born out of chaos. And from these ancients came the Titans, who wound up giving rise to the Olympians, you know, Zeus and all the rest of them. And they're the ones that created human beings. That's and everything else, basically, making order out of the world. That is the Greek mythology system that's set up for us. It's a lot more interesting after all of this. But essentially, that's where it comes from. It comes from chaos, and then very gradually, generation after generation, order is born out of chaos. Now, that may sound a little bit familiar. There is a very similar philosophy that is put forth today with regard to origins. Now, the evolutionary biologist, evolutionary astronomist would not care for that characterization being equated with mythology. But when you think about it, it does sound kind of similar, doesn't it? Originally, there was nothing. Or else there was this blob of stuff, the primal atom. They're a little fuzzy on whether the atom was always here or whether it wasn't always here. You got problems either way. Either it came from nothing or it came from something. Either way, you got a problem. But at any rate, there's this big yawning chasm of nothingness. And this little piece of particulate matter. Some people have estimated exactly how big this thing is. I don't know how they managed to do that. But at any rate, there's this football size, soccer ball size, whatever, thing that exploded for no particular reason. And the bits of stuff flew everywhere in all kinds of different directions, in every direction. And in fact, and these little particulates that flew out of what we usually call the Big Bang, eventually formed galaxies and stars and planets and comets and all that kind of stuff that you see in your telescope. And eventually, the little piece of it that would wound up being Earth, maybe it was a comet or a gigantic meteor or whatever, came a little bit too close to this one particular star, which we call our sun, as well as seven or eight other items, depending on how you stand on the Pluto issue, and got caught in the orbit and started spinning around. And this little piece eventually started doing all kinds of crazy things in and of itself, which are themselves as remarkable as the Big Bang, and created oceans and lands and eventually water. And life itself, and this primordial, et cetera. You know the story. You can judge for yourself which one of those two seems to make more sense. It seems to me like it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. The only difference really is that there's something attached to the one story that's called a god, or a bunch of gods. And there's no God in the other one, which obviously makes it much more appealing to people who don't believe in God or don't want to believe in God. That is the theory. And they call it a theory of evolution for a reason. That is the theory of how the world came to be in scientific anti-God terms. It is ultimate order that has descended, has evolved from ultimate chaos. And I would argue that that does not make a whole lot of sense. In fact, it is perhaps the biggest reason why I reject the notion of evolution, other than the much more appropriate theory, appealing theory, that we'll discuss later on. The idea of order coming from chaos is an idea that should have been born out of the mind of an 8-year-old. And maybe it was, who knows. Your average 8-year-old is told
go and clean your room. And he says, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. And he goes into his room, and he gets his tablet out, right? And he starts playing games and reading stuff and watching Netflix or whatever it is that the 8-year-olds are doing these days. And an hour goes by, and an hour goes by, and an hour goes by, and mom and dad come and check on things. And lo and behold, things are not better. In fact, they're worse. Well, how did that happen? Well, it happened because that's the way the world works. And I'm not letting the 8-year-olds off here. I'm saying that if you allow a system to continue in an unregulated, ungoverned fashion, chaos will come from order. This is what you call the second law of thermodynamics. Things breaking down out of their out of the natural order of things. Laundry is maybe the best example, right? Your laundry goes into the washing machine, comes out the lint filter. You know, how does it do that? It just does. Your laundry is more disorganized after than before. It just works that way. Every system that you know about works that way, except for the way that you came into being in the first place. The order that we see in the universe, the laws of thermodynamics themselves, the law of gravity, all the marvelous forces that keep us from falling off of the earth, that keep us existing in the first place. These things supposedly happened out of chaos. These things just randomly occurred. I don't believe that. I see no evidence for that, especially in the presence of a theory that is much more acceptable, the idea that chaos came out of cosmos, the other way around. Cosmos is another Greek word. And cosmos simply means order or functionality. It means things being proper, things being aligned appropriately. And it's not surprising when you look at a starry sky that the word cosmos came to mean in the Greek language the universe. And especially in the context of the ordered universe. This is before people understood about the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere and about the Earth's process through the galaxy and all of the rest of this. Basically, the ancients, it was much more simple for them. They would go out on a starry sky, the astronomers, and they would look up at the sky and they would put little dots on a piece of paper, and this is where all the stars are. And if it was a really, really clear night, they might be able to see a lot of them. And then they'd go out there the next night and would look exactly the same, conditions permitting. And over days and over weeks and months, it would change somewhat. You would see the panorama moving a little bit. But all the stars were in their proper order, and they would move across the sky, at least they were perceived, be moving across the sky at a very ordered clip, very measurable, quantifiable way. The elements that moved irregularly, they came to realize were not stars themselves, they were something else. They might have been planets, they might have been comets or meteors or whatever. The stars themselves, though, were always in place. They could absolutely be relied upon, no matter what happened. And if you didn't see them, it's because of some kind of condition, because the moon was too bright, or because there were too many clouds, or whatever. Extremely ordered, a orderly, harmonious system. This is what is referred to by the word cosmos. Kind of the opposite, actually, of chaos. Now, when you look at the world, and especially in the context of order, in the context of everything being in its place, this has always been seen, up until modern times, as evidence of divine creation. Now, we differed somewhat on what divine creation meant, exactly where that came from, how it happened, what his name was, things like that. But the very fact that the world works so well and so orderly and so consistently, this was seen as evidence of a divine mind that was orchestrating and managing and upholding all of it. And I would suggest to you that that was the right way of looking at things. And in fact, the Bible talks about ways that people were given opportunity. Romans chapter 1, where we read before, talks about how God did not leave himself without evidence. It was clearly seen through the world that surrounds them. They should have known about God, and in fact did know about God. This cosmos system is referred to in the Bible. Now, the word cosmos is not mentioned in the book of Genesis, of course, because cosmos is a Greek word, and Genesis was written in Hebrew. But there is an interesting word in Genesis chapter 2 and verse number 1, where it says that God had finished his work after the seventh day of creation. After the sixth day, actually. And that word finished, and again, I'm showing off my credentials here, but the tense in the Hebrew is the past tense, in which we are told that it refers to something that happened in the past and was completed in the past. There are tenses in many languages, not especially in English, but where there is ongoing action. Something is continuing to be fulfilled or continuing to take place. This past tense is something that happened and it was over. That's the word finished here. God finished his work, the creation work that we see about, that we read about in Genesis chapter 1, and God sees it, and it was good. And he made some more, and it was good. And it was made some more, and it was good. And then he made man in his image. Male and female created him. And after the creation of man, God called, and man and woman, that is, God calls his creation very good. God was finished at that point. Everything was set in order. Like your kid playing Legos, you know? You help your child with, they make these big Lego sets, right? Maybe this is more of a boy thing than a girl thing. We didn't really do Legos a whole lot in our house. But you go to Walmart and you buy the 10,000 Lego block Star Wars kit or whatever, right? And you take it home and dad's helping the kids and you put the whole thing together and it takes weeks and months and whatever. And you finally get the Death Star and it's all completely finished and it's perfect, right? It's exactly the way it's supposed to be. And dad is really amazed with himself, right? That's the way that it tends to work. And then dad goes, you know, off for a long weekend because of work or whatever, and he comes back and what's happened? There's Legos everywhere. What happened here? Chaos happened. That's what happened. We were finished. It was over. It's never going to get better than this. It can't possibly get better than this. The only thing that can happen, and what in fact will inevitably happen, is a breakdown of the order. The introduction of chaos that comes after the cosmos. There's an interesting phrase that's given to us in Psalm 102, verse number 26, where it talks about the world will wear out like a garment. And scholars are divided probably as to exactly what that means. But clearly it does not have the same kind of tone as you read in passages such as 2 Peter chapter 3, where the world is going to dissolve in fervent heat, where it's going to come to a sudden and complete end. That's not the way that it's described in this particular context. This seems to indicate a world that wears out, a world that runs down, a world that is in the process of enveloping more and more chaos to replace the cosmos. And when you talk about science, apart from a God consideration, apart from an order consideration, apart from origins, scientists will uniformly and universally tell you that's exactly what's happening to our world. Now, I hasten to add here, all these processes are extremely slow. If you're worried you're going to wake up tomorrow, well, we got the eclipse coming, right, next week? After the eclipse is over, assuming Jesus tarries, the sun will come back. Okay? Have no fear. That's the way it works. It will continue to work for unknown thousands and thousands of years. But scientists will acknowledge that the systems that we see in place that seem so structured and so permanent are in fact not. The sun is a fireball. And it sustains itself in a remarkable kind of fashion. But those of you who have worked with fire understand that fire requires fuel, and that by the very definition of things, fuel runs out. Any fire, every fire, will eventually go out, including the sun. And scientists claim to have measured this, that there is, in fact, depletion of the sun's resources. Again, don't freak out on me here. This is really, really slow. The sun is big. It's really, really big. We're not talking about 1% depletion or something like that. Much, much, much smaller than that. But it is burning up. We've been tracking the moon, you know, for the last couple hundred years or so. And since we've come up with these, you know, laser telescopes and such where we can determine distances with extraordinary accuracy, we are able to track the degree to which the moon is drifting away from the Earth. Not in terms of through the month. We're talking about through the years, through the centuries. The average orbit of the moon is getting wider and wider. And if you track it, and by the way, this is one of the evidences for a young Earth. If this progression seems to be relatively consistent, and if the Earth was, in fact, billions and billions of years old, there's no place for the moon to be. The moon couldn't possibly be that close. It's an indication it's only just a few thousand years. But it is very, very gradually drifting further and further away. Now, eventually, the moon will get so far away that it will cease to have any kind of meaningful impact on our world. The tides won't work like they normally do, and other processes also that are going to materially affect the way that we live our lives. Things that we take for granted are not going to work anymore 100,000 years from now or something like that. They work great now, but it is very, very slowly breaking down. You can say the same thing about the magnetic field of the Earth and other factors as well. Things that are extraordinarily constant in the short term, in the extremely long term, we find out they are not constant. And they are all devolving. The world is working less and less efficiently. That's the way everything is. We see that in our own life. We see it in our laundry. We see it in our kids' bedrooms. We see it everywhere in our world. That is the natural order of things for chaos to come out of cosmos and not the other way around. Order always comes first. And then disorder. Or if you prefer, there's disorder and then order is imposed upon the disorder. And you could argue that's the story of Genesis chapter 1, the first couple of verses there. That God creates order out of chaos. Don't see a big difference one way or the other. The order has to be there. The order cannot come automatically, naturally, out of disorder. That's just not the way the world works. Now, let me explain a little bit about the implications for our life here. The reason that chaos came out of cosmos is human beings. Entirely, 100% the fault of human beings. You can put all kind. I don't know exactly what the world was doing in the Garden of Eden, whether these processes were actually in place, whether they began to be in place at the fall, whether God foreknew about the fall and went ahead and started the clock rolling on the earth beforehand. I don't know how God did this. He doesn't tell us. What we do know is that the world as it was presented to Adam and Eve was perfect. It worked. It was ordered. It was the opposite of chaos. It was the absolute cosmos. And then sin came into the world and defiled it. And because of that, we have the curse that's given to us in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 17 through 19. Particularly there, the curse that's placed upon the earth, upon the land. Things will not work as they had been in times past. Different processes will take place. And again, exactly how much God changed, we don't know. But what we do know is this. We are now able to see the world breaking down. We're able to see the world not working. At least not working like it used to. This is God introducing chaos into the world because of the sin of mankind. And the spiritual implications of this are even more clear. We were in harmony. We were in fellowship with God in the garden. We walked and talked with Him. And then sin came in, and this was no longer possible. A sort of fellowship was still available to us, and of course he extends the hope of the greater, fuller fellowship at some point in some different life. But life here on earth, we could not live with God anymore. Because the earth had been defiled, because chaos had been introduced. This happens not just in the world in general. This happens in our world. This happens in my world, my life. The chaos that exists in my world exists because I have disrupted it. I have disrupted the cosmos that God had given to me. I cringe a little bit when we talk about, I couldn't help it. The devil made me do it. God made me this way. You know, all these expressions that come up that are deliberately or accidentally intended to deflect responsibility. That, yes, my life is not what it should be, but it's not my fault. Yes, it is. It is your fault. It is my fault. It is our devolution. It is our chaos that we have introduced into our own lives because of our failure to accept God's direction for our life. God had us in order, and he gave us a plan. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, right? Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. We decided we weren't going to do that. We decided we were going to do something else. And when we did that, the disorder that we see in the world, in a marvelous world, in a magnificent world, but still a certain element of chaos, a certain amount of disorder, messiness. We see that in our own lives as well. No matter how righteous, no matter how holy, no matter how well-intentioned we are, our life is a mess. This is because we have introduced the chaos into our world. The world that resulted from this departure, from this chaos, was chaotic. Now, thanks be to God, God has always had remedy in place for his people of one sort or another. God has been available to his estranged people. He has been available for people to come to him in trusting and obedient faith, and that he would be able to bridge the gap. And this all looks forward, of course, to the coming of Jesus, that Jesus would be empower God to forgive sins, truly forgive sins. But in the absence of that, in the absence of any kind of life of faith or attempted life of faith, a life that devalues God and that devalues God's cosmos, God's order, we see a greater and greater degree of depravity, a greater and greater degree of departure from God's norms, a mess, what we would call, you know, clutter, sin, essentially. We talked about this a little bit last week. In our discussion of postmodernism and the notion that the world just doesn't try to apply God's rules anymore. That basic fundamental things like truth and facts and things just don't matter as much today as they used to. Where did that come from? This is where it came from. It came from allowing God to not be in our lives. We read Romans chapter 1, verse 28 through 32, lest you think that this is something that we invented within our lifetimes. To one degree or another, it didn't always look exactly the same, but to one degree or another, this has always been the case. As man sees fit to not have God in his knowledge anymore, we're not going to make our decisions based on God's will, based on God's order. We are no longer seeking to establish God's order in our lives. And because of that, our lives fall apart. And in fact, things get so messy that we convince ourselves that we like the mess. There is a world of difference, parents know what I'm talking about here, between a child who is not especially good at cleaning his room or consistent at cleaning his room versus a child who likes mess and who rejoices, in fact, in mess and has no intention of doing what his mom and dad say, who just kind of delights in taking stuff out of drawers and throwing it everywhere. World of difference between those two. They're both messes, but not the same mess by any means. We are living in a society today that is deliberately trying to mess itself up. And that's why things look as chaotic as they do. Because God's cosmos has been rejected. Now, the same principle works in reverse. If we are responsible for bringing chaos into God's cosmos, it is God and God alone who can reverse this, who can create cosmos from our chaos. It is only God who can intervene here and reestablish order. How many of you have seen Fantasia? Or clips of it? Have you seen a clip of Fantasia? It's either the dancing hippos or it's the Mickey Mouse thing, right? Well, you remember Mickey Mouse, and he is the Sorcerer's Apprentice. And he is bored with his job. And so he finds his master's hat. And so he puts his master's hat on. And he starts doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Right? And he doesn't know what he's doing. And before too long, it's a mess. Right? It's an absolute disaster. Because he has taken control of something, or tried to take control of something that he did not have ultimate control over. He messes everything up. And then all of a sudden, right there at the end, as the music reaches the climax, the master silences things. Just a wave of his hand. Everything's put back in order. He takes his hat back. Everything's okay. Because the master's in control. That's what God does for us. Not apart from our will. We have to be involved in this process. But if God will be welcomed into our lives, God can help us find this cosmos that we lost, that we were in fact incapable of finding or maintaining on our own. God is the only one who can help us with this. The Bible talks about this constantly. Jeremiah 10:23, right? No, it is not a man to direct his own steps. It is not he who walks to direct his steps. I refer to Jeremiah 10:23 constantly. The way of man is not in himself. It's not your fault. It's not my fault that we don't know the best thing to do. You can't know. God has made it so that you have to trust in him. Ephesians 2 verse 3 talks about how we were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. Our nature, and we're not talking here about something that you couldn't help doing, but it's where you were. It's what you find natural. The lifestyle that you have. The lifestyle that, apart from any direct intervention, you're going to keep. This is who you are. Who you were was a sinner. And you were going to stay a sinner until God did something about it. And thankfully, he did. Ephesians chapter 2 talks about that. About how Jesus came into this world and offered us salvation. By grace you're saved through faith, the text says. And this not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. What we want to do oftentimes, as moral people, as well-intentioned people, but yet willful people, stubborn people, bullheaded people, what we oftentimes want to do is fix our own chaos. Yes, Al, you got me. Okay, my life is a mess. I'm not what I ought to do. I'm not what I ought to be. I've messed things up royally. But you know what? This is under control. I can do this. That's what Mickey does, right? Oh, it's starting to really get ugly, right? And so what are we going to do? We're going to do even more of what we did before in an effort to try to reverse the course somehow of this raging river that we created for ourselves. It doesn't work. It didn't work for us any more than it worked for Mickey Mouse. Romans chapter 12 talks a little bit about Paul's own struggles. Romans chapter 7, did I say 12? Romans 7, particularly verse number 18 and following, I'll read to you. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is in my flesh, for the willingness is present in me, but the doing of the good is not. For the good I want, I do not do, but I practice the very evil that I do not want. But if I am doing the very thing I do not want, I am no longer the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. There's a lot of deep theological discussion in that. A lot of people have gone round and round. It's exactly what Paul means by this. Exactly how is a righteous person enslaved to sin? And can such a thing possibly be? And maybe he's using this as a figure of speech to describe mankind in general and not Paul particularly in this saved state. I tend very strongly to accept the simple explanation whenever I can. And the simple explanation of this text is righteous people sin. Righteous people found themselves caught up in sin. Overwhelmed in sin. All of us do from time to time, including Paul. We're not suggesting it's not our fault. We're not suggesting we couldn't have and shouldn't have tried harder. But here we are, caught up in this sin, and it seems sometimes like we're just taking one step forward and two steps back. And Paul rejoices in this context. In verse number 25, thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. That's going to who sets me free from the body of death. In verse 24, Jesus will, not me. If I will trust in Jesus, I can get out of this. But not because I tried really hard, but because I trusted in a Savior who was trying hard for me. And when we do that, when we will trust in Him and His salvation, and yes, that includes going where He tells us to go and staying where He tells us to stay. If we will trust in Him, He can help us. He will help us with His grace, with His direction, with His order. We find order presenting itself in our lives. Sometimes it happens gradually. Sometimes it happens very, very gradually. But it happens. We find our life coming into place. Maybe we don't sin quite as much as we used to. Maybe our sins aren't quite as grotesque. Maybe not quite as bad an example for the people who are around us. Our intentions are getting better. Our efforts are getting better. Our priorities are getting better. And gradually, step by step, day by day, we grow into the image of Jesus Christ. Through God's patience and mercy, this process continues to evolve in me, to bring me into a higher state of being. Spiritual evolution, if you want to look at it that way. I become a different person. I become more cosmos and less chaos because I'm allowing God to have His way with me. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, right? Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Do not trust in yourself. Your own understanding is how you got messed up in the first place. Again, I'm not trying to pick on the little kids here, but the kids having their idea of what a proper room looks like, that's why the room got to look like it looks, right? We're not satisfied with that. We're trying to convince the child not to be satisfied with that. You can do better. You have to trust in mom and dad. This is what you can do. I can't do that. Yes, you can do that. With my help, you will do that. And very gradually, very slowly, we get to where mom and dad want us to be. That's the process that we're trying to encourage in our lives, what God is trying to encourage in our lives. So don't get overly discouraged. Don't quit on yourself when it seems like all you see is chaos, when it seems like there's no hope at all, that surely we will never get to where we ought to be. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. With God's help, we can, in fact, keep this process going. And if it seems like your parents have unreasonable expectations, there's absolutely no way you could ever possibly satisfy them, and the same thing happens for God, realize that your parents love you, and that they are patient with you, and maybe they'll pitch in a little help when you absolutely need it. Don't quote me on that. And thankfully, no matter how much of a mess we leave in our lives, how inadequate we are at fixing our problems, we serve a gracious God. We serve a loving, helpful, merciful God who wants us to succeed. And if we are making our best effort to live in His order, He is going to establish that order in our lives. And ultimately, finally, all of the mess that we see in this life, not just that we've created for ourselves, but what Adam and Eve created for us, way back in the beginning, all of it is going to be removed from our lives. And that order, that cosmos that God had in mind for His people all along, that we threw away, will be completely and totally reestablished in our lives. And we'll have it for all of eternity. That's the promise that God gives us. But only for those who will, in fact, trust in Him and allow Him and His processes to work in their lives. Those who trust and obey, as the song goes. Or if you prefer, as the other song goes, Christ receiveth sinful men. Christ will welcome you into His arms. He will welcome you into His fellowship. And He will begin this process in you to reestablish the order that you should have, that you say you want, if you will trust in Him. No matter what you've done, no matter what you've not done, this is the promise that God gives to you. If we can help you find that order, if we can help you reach out to the Lord and ask for help and ask for mercy and ask for forgiveness, we want to do exactly that. here this evening. If there's anything we can do to help you walk with Christ more perfectly, help you get to heaven, and help you establish God's order in your life, please allow us to help while we stand and sing at this time to encourage you.